We're doing it again. This is a very special episode for us because even though it's coming at you as episode 3, it's actually the first one that we ever recorded. In for his stream close-up today, beloved children's TV host, Benjamin Beppe Singer. And we're really happy that you found us. I'm Brian Laffin, and this podcast is produced by Jose Fernandez Alameda. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to review us or give us a few stars on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. And if you want to reach out, you can find us on Twitter at Stream Close Up. So without further ado, this is episode 3 of Stream Close Up with Benjamin Beppe Singer. Hit it, Jose. Beppe is a proud son of Malmo, and his mission is to ensure that learning is fun, to fight against the institutional tendency within the educational system to dampen our natural human inquisitiveness. Beppe is a father, a drummer, a chemist, a math teacher. He's a TV host and a producer. As if that's not enough, he's also a product developer, an author, and a public speaker. He's been a regular contributor to the Children's Channel, appearing on programs like Labba and Tiggy Tester. In 2011, he was named Sweden's Educator of the Year for his work on Järnkontoret, an iconic children's show from the Swedish public broadcaster SVT, where he's credited with helping to inspire a generation of researchers that now fill the halls of the universities around Scandinavia. Most recently, he won the prestigious Kristallen Award, the Swedish equivalent of an Emmy or a BAFTA, for his work on Viaplay's Christmas calendar, The Great Experiment. It was named Best Youth Program, and it's the first time that a show not produced by a traditional broadcaster has won the award. In short, a modern Renaissance man. Welcome to the studio, Beppe Singer.
Wow. Now that's an introduction, Brian. If you put it that way, I mean, it sounds like I've been achieving some things the last couple of years.
Well, a very busy guy, at the least.
Yeah, and it's surreal to get the last 20 or so years of your life summarized like that. It sounds like, as you say, a Renaissance man, but it sounds like somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. But did we miss anything?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I didn't even manage to count the many points, the bullets you had in your introduction, but like the one thing that was the most important for me in a way was like me being a father, because that's taking up about 90% of my brain activity. All the other things have all evolved, you know, in a sort of a holistic way. I don't really have like I haven't had a plan to change the world or do whatever. Or I mean, it's all been, you know, trying to do my best, working from the heart, and it's all just about caring for the kids. You know, I don't want the kids to have to feel stupid or excluded in some very sometimes elitistic environments, like, you know, chemistry class or whatever. I really don't care if the kids become chemists or not when they grow up. I mean, sure, I mean, having more engineers and chemists and everything would help the society evolve, but I don't care if they want to work with chemistry or movies or donuts or whatever. I mean, I just don't want them to feel stupid and outside.
So you work with children's programming. Is that because you're a father? Did you do that before your kids came into your life?
Well, actually, my daughter, who is now 7 years old, she was already born. But there was no direct connection between, you know, having children and working with children's television. I had already before that worked for many years as a teacher at a school in Malmö. And, you know, I realized that I was the strongest or the best when it came to kids that really didn't understand. The kids that really, you know, were feeling outside and were labeling themselves as stupid or that they were not enough, that they were never going to amount to anything because of especially mathematics. That's one of those subjects that really make people feel like shit, you know? And I just, so I discovered that it was these kids that I actually, in some way, I helped them to pass those classes. And I realized that, you know, the mathematics, they affect your entire personality, your view on yourself, your view on how you perceive your chances for the future, you know? I don't know why, I mean, mathematics has such a status in society that, you, at least amongst kids, they say to each other, if you're good at math, you're one of the smart kids. And if you fail, you can't find the fucking X. You're one of the stupid kids. You're never going to amount to anything. And there's something really wrong about that. There's
something terribly wrong about that. Yeah. Why did you decide to become an educator?
So yeah, I mean, as I said, like, it's this is when you did the very extreme introduction, which would make even the most experienced public person get hybris or megalomania. How do you call that in English?
Megalomania, yeah.
Megalomania. You know, things have sort of evolved from themselves. I used to be a high school dropout. I hated going to school. I didn't feel comfortable in class. I didn't feel comfortable in my own life and my existence, and my parents, they were not doing that good. So I turned into, unfortunately, you know, a pretty dark path and drugs and not being very kind to myself or the people around me. And then by some circumstances, I decided I was actually on tour in the United States with a band called Yind. I mean, it was a little shitty punk band. We were driving around in a van, you know, like a really shitty van, doing ramen noodles by the highways because we couldn't afford to even have proper dinners. But we did like 32 states in 3 months and was amazing. But during that trip, I decided like that I had to do something else now. I went broke being a musician and broke in such a bad way that I really had to look at solutions. And I saw for the first time an episode of CSI and I decided that these guys look cool. I want to be a forensic. And I applied for like a chemist education, like a master in chemistry. And I got accepted. I don't know. Nobody wanted to be chemists back then. So, you know, if you could just spell your name, they let you in. And I started to be a chemist. I'm still trying to answer your question, Brian. I know I'm ranting. The question was, why did you become an educator? And I'm getting there. Please bear with me, both you and the listeners. So yeah, I got a chemist education. So all of a sudden, this fuck up Beppe is a chemist. Like, I'm supposed to be all grown up now and have a proper job and maybe wear a shirt from time to time. And so I applied for chemistry-related jobs, and I even they called me for an interview as well to a company who was back then in Denmark, and they were working with some pharmaceutical whatever, and they needed chemists, and I looked at them and I looked at their products, and I started realizing like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, these people, I mean, I'm sure they are doing some well to someone somewhere, but I mean, they were all about the money.
Greed in that industry is, well, I mean, tough to unravel.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a totally different podcast, but I mean, I was sitting there in these really tight pants that I thought I had to wear to look a certain way, and I was sweating and I was really uncomfortable, and I was like, what am I doing here? So I went back and I decided, no, I can't work like this. And by chance, you know, I applied for like 20 other jobs, like everything from project management to a part-time math teacher at the school. And I got accepted as a math teacher at this school. Like, one day a week, I was going to help with math. And one day a week turned to 5 days a week in a week. Because
so you went from broke musician to broke teacher.
I went from broke musician to broke teacher. And I would also like to say that, you know, being broke I in a spiritual way, has been the best time ever. I mean, it sounds really strange to say that I'm really, you know, I'm well off today, and it's easy for me to say a thing like that today because I know I can pay my bills now. But I have to tell you that summer before I started working as a teacher, we didn't have any money. We didn't have any money at all. Me and my then girlfriend, now wife, we had like the best summers ever because we had to, you know, be creative and inventive and spare, you know, share time together. Walking down to the old Balkan district in Malmö, buying those illegally imported cases of beer for 100 crowns and just really living day by day. And that was amazing. So I became a teacher and I worked for 5 years as a teacher. And once again, I ended up in a situation where I had to think to myself, what the fuck am I doing? Because a boss of mine at the school, he said, well, you know, you got some spirit here. You're not like the other teachers. First of all, you make a lot of kids feel good about themselves, like kids.
How dare you?
Yeah, well, he actually liked it. And he was like, do you want to try to be a principal at this school? The question came in 2009, I think. And I was like, no. But I went home and I talked to my wife about it. And then everybody around me said, well, this is going to be great for your CV. This is going to be great for your, you know, advancement or whatever. You're going to have the opportunity to affect so many more kids than just the ones in your classroom or whatever. So I ended up saying yes to the proposition, and I worked as a principal of the same school, a high school in Malmö, for a year, and I hated every day of it.
Oh.
I hated every single day of it.
Too far removed from the kids, or?
Too far away from the kids and too heads up into administrative, like bureaucratic stuff. Just working, doing paperwork, sitting by the computer, and also realizing, you know, when you get an insight in that specific school's budget, you see that not all the money goes where it's supposed to go. And I was puking in my own mouth, you know, working there. And I had like, I got some real anxiety problems. And I, a year in, because everybody was saying, you know, give it a year. It's like everywhere else, you know, give it a year and you'll figure it out. And to the day, a year after, I quit.
Okay, I gave it a year.
And like on the day, I quit. And I went back being a teacher, being confused and like, what's going to happen now? And then a friend of mine, he actually filmed me during one of my chemistry classes, Petter Mattsson. I would love to give a shout out to Petter Mattsson. He was a teacher back then as well, and now he's moved on to develop software and doing some cool stuff. I don't really know what it is.
How did that happen? Are you guys sitting around and he says, I'd love to see what you do at work one day? Or do you say, come on in and watch me? I mean,
no, because he was a colleague. We were working close. Okay. Like both me and him, we were like these, we don't give a fuck about like the system right now. We want the kids to have fun during our classes. We want them to learn. We want them to develop as individuals. But maybe we don't have to follow the, the curriculum note by note. Because right now we want to have fun together. We want to build personalities, self-confidence. I mean, these are kids in high school. You know, they get the hair growing all over their body. You know, they start falling in love. They start exploring both drugs and whatever. They don't give a fuck about Pythagoras' theorem at that point of life. So we have to make the trip as easy as possible for them. So he was like, they announced on television that they needed a new host to the show Hjärnkontoret, which has been on since 1995. And he said, you should apply. And I'm like, dude, why should I apply? You should apply. Like, I don't want to work with television. Like, and he's like, dude, you got to apply. And we got a little bit drunker, and then he said, okay. So we went back to the lab, and he filled me. I did some stupid experiments. Like, it was really ridiculous. Like, why don't astronauts ever drink a cup of coffee when they land on the moon? Because they must be tired from the long trip, you know. And then we talk about atmosphere and pressure and stuff.
For the people listening who don't know about Hjärnkontoret, can you just explain what that is?
Well, yeah, Hjärnkontoret is a show, but almost an institution. I mean, it's one of the more credible shows out there, made by public service since 1995. It's a fun and easily accessible science show for kids, you know, talking about all kinds of subjects that make up the world we live in a easy and fun way. And not just kids, but also their parents and their teacher appreciate the show because we don't use all the fancy schmancy words that they use, for example, in Vetenskapens Värld or other science shows for grown-ups. I mean, even parents come to me and say, it's a lot more easier to understand when you explain it like you do, because now we don't feel excluded.
So does it just happen like that? Okay, you guys, you're inspired one night. You say, we're going to film this. Jan Kantoritz looking for a new host. You film something, you send it in, and you're the new host. Does it go that quickly?
Well, no. I mean, to me, it was like a joke. You know, he was like, I'm going to send it because they were looking for a new host. And I'm like, yeah, you do whatever. And then they a couple of weeks later, they contacted me. So out of like 800 people, there were like 30 people they contacted. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then I started, my pulse started to elevate a bit, you know, because it went from, yeah, this is a joke to, well, maybe there's something to this. But I still didn't want to involve myself emotionally because, you know, I don't want to get disappointed. So I went to Stockholm and I did an audition, you know, I got some tasks to perform, you know, beforehand. And then another couple of weeks went and then we were three. And this is the shittiest part ever. I've never felt so lousy before. They didn't just call me and tell me that I got the job. No, they wanted to surprise me at the school I was working at. And that day that they actually came to the school with cameras and flowers and like they did the whole thing, I was watching my class having the final exam in chemistry. They had so, like, the level of anxiety in that room, like 20 kids in their 18, they were like 17, 18, writing a chemistry test. And all of a sudden the camera comes in like, hey man, congratulations. You're the new star of the hit show. Yeah, I'm going to do it. And I was looking at the kids and they were like, oh, can you guys be quiet? I got to figure this shit out. And I was like, I blacked out. So I said, sayonara suckers to the kids. Nobody was in a good spirit. And then we moved to Stockholm, me and my family, and we've been here since 2011.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any memorable stories from your time at Jan Kantoritz? Anything happening behind the scenes that you'd like to share?
Well, I mean, I would say that Jan Kantoritz for me was, there were a lot of firsts for me. I mean, imagine having a job where, I mean, because first of all, I was like, okay, this is cool. It's like, okay, I get to still be a teacher and like keep on communicating in the way I normally do. But my classroom is a bit bigger now. I mean, we're talking about like 500,000 viewers at some point.
The national classroom.
Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. But then, you know, to be able to dive head deep in like something that really interests you for a week or 2 weeks as being a part of your job, just doing that, just thinking about it, just having fun with it. It is amazing. We tried, there's so many crazy things we tried. I mean, I was 3D animated and put into a playable game. Could you imagine that? As an old gamer, I mean, that's a dream come true. But there were also like, I mean, I was, there's a thing called flight. Wait a second. What do you call that? You know, when you there's like it's like a wind tunnel and you go in there and you down on like a hurricane that's coming from underneath. So it's like a artificial parachuting kind of thing. What do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I don't know what it's called. But
flight, body flight or something. I think it's called. And that should cost a lot of money because it's really expensive to do it. And we had to have that tube available all day And I just couldn't get up. I mean, I'm a bit, what do you say? I'm festively plump, one might say. I'm a bit on the heavy side. And I guess that doesn't have any connection at all to the body flight thing. I just didn't get the technique. We went in there, take after take after take after take. Me in like a really tight spandex suit, trying to get airborne.
We have to get the video of that.
The video is actually, I think it's, I think it's on the web somewhere or in my phone. But all you see is like a huge hairy meatball trying to get airborne, and it looks so funny. But I really, you know, I have sometimes you really have to give that. You know, you don't have you can't work in this business if you're too worried about how you look or how you sound, because then you get, you know, you're gonna, in Swedish there's a saying called balal. It's like, you know, that's the people that flip out and get all absorbed by themselves and their looks and their, you know, and they start really feeling really bad. You have to have some self-distance, and that's my all-time high self-distance moment, and I don't care. It was really funny to look at myself.
Beppe Singer, built for comfort, not for speed.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm the huggable type. I'm not the best looking guy or the best smelling guy or the best whatever guy, but yeah, I think it's Amy Schumer. She said a word that's really stuck to me, and she said, "I'm not pretty. I'm not ugly. I'm approachable." And that's, I think that's my take on life. You know, I want to be approachable.
Let me ask you, when you were teaching, did you ever feel like you were performing for the kids, that there was an element of theater to what you were doing even then?
I mean, it's really interesting that you asked that question, because I realized first when I started to work with television, both with SVT and UA, both are branches of the Swedish Public Service, that I had used
dramatic methods.
I had actually used the same methods they use when they make Hollywood movies when I planned my lessons, which of course had proven to be a very powerful tool, because when you go into a classroom and you start off by saying, today we're going to learn everything about Pythagoras as according to the curriculum, or as opposed to if you go in and you say, listen guys, today I'm going to tell you a really fucked up story.
There you go, you got me. I'm interested.
There's a difference there in the approach. And also, while you'll tell, because it's really, I was lying my ass off every time I really tried to, you know, engage the kids. I was telling them these crazy stories in order to get to the subject of the day. And to do that, you really need to use that film, that movie kind of sense. And also, the most important thing in any movie or in any lesson is to get to the point of no return. You want the viewers or you want the students to say, okay, man, you got to show us, like, what happened? That's where you want to go as a teacher or as a producer or whatever. So, yeah. There's so many similarities between how I worked in the classroom and how I keep on working on screen.
So sorting through all of this, is there one attribute that you would say is the key to your success?
I mean, I guess I could say low self-esteem, which probably sounds strange to a couple of you listeners who probably don't have low self-esteem, because having low self-esteem, it could go two ways. It could either go into a self-destructive path, or it can go into a creative path where you assume that everybody around you have the same low self-esteem thoughts about themselves, and you try to do the best you can do to make that person feel good about themselves. So I would say, like, seriously, I've never been asked this question before. And so low self-esteem was my first thought. And then, of course, I don't know. I've been diagnosed with ADHD recently. I don't really care about what the name of what I have is.
Yeah, by the way, I thought it was very brave of you to go out publicly when you got that diagnosis with your Facebook post.
Yeah,
why do you share something so personal?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, I thought I had to do something, and I did it with another very credible medium called Kamratposten, which is like a magazine and now a website and Facebook page for kids in the really hard ages from like 10 to 17, you know, the worst years of your life. I did it through them because I felt like I had to do something, because at that time it was like sort of becoming like a trend, like everybody was fucking coming out. Everybody was talking about their diagnosis. You get Victor from Samir of Victor. You get all these celebrities that come out and say, oh, I got ADHD and look at me now. It all went well. And like, I look at them and I, okay, so what are you doing? You're dancing without a shirt on screen. You're talking about slapping girls on their ass. And like, is that a good example for parents to tell their kids, you know, you could be like him in that band when you grow up, because he also had ADHD. And I thought, we need a counterpoint. We need to show like real people. I mean, yeah, I was in a way like famous for the kids, but it was me as a teacher, as a father that was talking, and not, oh, look at me, I'm this big guy from Jankontoret.
That was a question I wanted to get back to. When things started breaking for you, when you started to become a profile, when people started to recognize you, how did that change things for you?
I mean, you should totally ask my wife about that, because she sees it a lot more than I do. I say that nothing has changed other than, you know, the way we visit playgrounds.
I can imagine the Beatles.
Well, I mean, there's a collective kind of thing that happens when I meet children by themselves, one by one. They're really cool, but when they're in smaller or bigger groups, they start acting like, I guess, people act in shows and whatever. They start screaming together, and then it could get a bit hectic sometimes. But and that's the really hard part, because, you know, I'm a father and I'm out playing with my kids and I can have a shitty day, but I gave myself a promise that I should never ever break my promise to my viewers as my students. You know, doesn't matter if I have a really shitty day or I just fought with my boss or my wife or my friend. The second I go into the classroom, I have an obligation to give them what they need there and then. It's about them and not about me. And I try to think the same way when kids approach me and they have seen me on television, they get happy, they get excited. I would never ask a kid to fuck off because I'm having a bad day, which is like the hardest thing ever, because you can have like really tough arguments with, like I have with my wife sometimes, you know, we have two small kids. We're not, life is fucking shitty sometimes. And then you have a kid approach in the middle of an argument and you have to give that kid all of the attention. Maybe not as long as you usually do, but you have to give them a smile and give them like a push in the right direction in life. So it's hard. It's really, really hard.
I can imagine. I mean, if you're a teacher in a small town, you run into your kids, their parents every now and then. But if you're the teacher for a nation, there's no ducking behind that.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I really try to live by the motto of Peter Parker, you know, the guy.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, great responsibilities. And that, I think that affects everything I do, from TV shows to, you know, doing my experiment books, my lectures. Like, I have a responsibility and I have a possibility as well to affect and influence young and old to try better and be better. And you can't just get all, excuse the expression, but like, all horny on the famousness and, you know, just devour it all and say, I'll go with whatever, because now I'm a famous person. I'm very careful about in which situations I appear, which cooperations.
We won't see you doing an ad for cigarettes anytime soon.
Probably won't, man. And I know that I'm still in my, like, the honeymoon phase of my celebrityhood that I can afford to say, no, I'm never going to do cigarette commercials. I know so many people that throughout the years have said so. But I always think that, you know what? If I can't pay the rent, I can always go back working as a teacher. And I actually miss that as well. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if I, in 5 or 10 years, I go back working as a teacher.
You mentioned your work as an author and as a speaker. If people want to find more information about that work, where can they go?
I mean, there's so many, you know, platforms. You could. I have a web page.
BepeSinger.se?
Yeah, it sounds like you've researched this. Or did you just guess?
I tried to do a little homework. Hey,
this sounds like a plug, man.
Well, look, you're kind enough to give us your time. It's only fair for you to do a little promotion for what you're working on.
I sort of have like a web page where it's like a digital business card. You know, like now when you have a... I mean, it's my business now. That's how I pay my salary, by doing lectures and doing deals with other, you know, like books and experiment boxes and also TV. But you have to have a page.
So go to BepeSinger.se and check that
out. Yeah, I mean, do it. I mean, and don't expect like the world's most awesome page. But I mean, there's a button there that's called contact. You can email me directly and we'll figure something out. I don't have an agent or like a... anything fancy like that. I do it all by myself. I don't get emails every day like everybody wants, but I want to do it myself.
Cool. All right. On that note, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Beppe's latest success, his recent win at the Kristallin Awards, and how the great experiment came to be.
Och Kristallen till årets barn- och ungdomsprogram
går till...
Det stora experimentet!
And we're back with Beppe Singer in the studio. Beppe, what a storyteller. What you've accomplished already before we even go any further. A whole career as a teacher, working with Sveriges Television. And now, most recently, you're coming off the big experiment, the Jule Kalender, as we call it here in Sweden, that you did for a streaming service called Viaplay. Can you tell us how something like that comes about? How do you make a switch?
Well, I mean, does everybody know what a Jule Kalender is? That's a pretty Swedish phenomenon.
There you go. Might want to start there.
Yeah, or I might get there because there's a logic point in this story where it gets explained. But yeah, so I was working at public service and I, did some amazing shows and met some amazing colleagues and we had like a really good time. But I also had like other ambitions, like, you know, I want to, you know, talk about science in a broader front. I want kids to be able to go to the toy stores or the bookstores and like find really good stuff that's fun. And also educational, and I mean, there are already tons of these products out there, but I wanted to, you know, give it my own touch because it's actually been a dream of mine since even before I started working in television to try to, you know, make my own, like, specialized CSI boxes and stuff because I love that stuff. And also because I thought there, you know, Sweden, there was actually room in Sweden to do some other products. But as an employee of public service, of course, you can't do that because part of the wonderfulness of public service is that it's independent. It's not partial and it's not partial to anyone, whether it comes to politics or economics, you know. And so I decided, you know what? Maybe it's time to go somewhere else to work. I was thinking, like, is there anything anywhere else I could go that where I could still, you know, work with children's television because the format is so amazing, it's so fun, but also be free to run my own business, you know, to do stuff that's meaningful and fun and stuff that their parents could feel comfortable with, but also make some money. I mean, there's a taboo when it comes to working with children and making money. And to me, I think one does not have to exclude the other. As long as you can firmly stand behind your products and say, these are good, these are educational, and these are giving the kids more value than the box.
You're opening up a big can of worms here because
I understand.
You talk about SVT and, you know, working with kids. We talk about a brand like Disney, where it's only commercial, working with kids. And SVT has this weird relationship that I don't understand with Disney, with this Jule Kalender, or the, what is it, not Jule Kalender,
that's Christmas special they're doing.
Every year they show Disney and they promote their latest. I don't get how that holds together with the philosophy that you just described.
Well, it's as with many philosophies, it's not always consequent, you know. You can have a philosophy, that's one thing. And then you have your everyday practice, and that's another thing. And I guess I'll stop at that, okay. Because, yeah. You know, I used to be a vegan, but I love cheese.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, that's, I mean, it's you have these ambitions, and then you also have the need from the audience. And sometimes it's really hard to know where to put your focus.
So you say you
want... I'm being really vague here now, right?
Fair enough.
I'm really trying to be... We talked about this before, Brian and me, before this take, we were like, okay, so we got to be totally professional about this. We're not going to talk about anything that's, you know, going to offend anyone or put anyone in the hot spot. And we're not. We're totally not. We're trying to be all professional about this. So I'm saying it's not always easy to be consequent.
But speaking a little truth at the same time. But I have to say, you say, you know, you had ambitions to do things... sort of that you couldn't do because of the restrictions of public broadcasting, it must have still been a bit of a risk to step away from something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I realized when I talked to all my colleagues, you know, the other hosts or the directors or the, you know, the ones doing their internships, and everybody that was besides, over, under, or behind the camera. I mean, there's a lot of focus on, you know, the host is doing this and the host is doing that. And I think that's, you know, that's the dark side of this business, that one person always get all the attention while there are hundreds of people working their asses off to make it possible. So all of these people, I walked around and I talked to them, and I realized I'm sort of the only one that actually, I come from another world. I didn't really want to work with television. I didn't expect to work with it. So I got an education in chemistry. I used to work as a teacher, and everybody around me, they were like, full-in media co-workers. So they had nothing else to fall back on if the shit would hit the fan. So I realized that, you know, okay, so maybe, you know, somebody has to do something, and I decided, you know, I'm going to try, and you know, worst case, which is in my situation, like, almost best case, I could go back working as a teacher. So I guess that's why I did it in maybe a more like aggressive manner than anyone else has tried before. You know, I started thinking, is there anywhere else I could go? And the answer was pretty easy. No, there is nowhere else to go. There is no other credible producers of children's television in Sweden other than public service.
Who do a great job in that area.
They do an awesome job. They're the best at it. And
well, according to the people at the Kristall Awards, you're the best at it.
Well, I mean, we'll get to that. I'm just trying to be humble, man. I mean,
I'm not going to let you be humble.
No, but they've been doing so much good for so many years. But we'll talk about that in a second, you know. So there wasn't anywhere to go, so I decided maybe I should try to create somewhere to go. Like, you know, try to find or maybe make it possible for somebody else to start doing credible children's entertainment. So I was at this, you know, by chance, I was at this lovely Sunday brunch, and I was sitting down with a couple of friends, and one of them worked at Viaplay. And I asked her, like, seriously, why don't you do like Netflix has been doing for a couple of years now? Why don't you do your own originals for kids? And she was like, hey, that's a strange coincidence, because we just had a meeting about it last week. And I was like, you got to give me like a... the email address to the, you know, the programchef, the one responsible for your originals. I gotta have a sit down. I gotta have like a cup of coffee with the guy. I didn't have a plan. I was just like, I gotta meet him.
So you didn't have this show in mind?
No, not at all.
General idea that you wanted to do move further?
No, I had nothing.
Okay.
I was like, I was really scared. You know, I wrote an email to him, and I was like, Is would it be possible for somebody like me to just have a sit down and a cup of coffee and just talk about children's television? And he was at the right point of his career to say, hell yeah. And we had a couple of, you know, fika, it's a very important word. We had a couple of, you know, coffee and buns kind of situations where we actually sort of realized that we liked each other. And I also realized that, hey man, this guy has his heart in the right place. He really wants to do some, you know, good television for kids, or he wanted to do some really good shows for the kids where the kids are in focus, you know, stuff with content, like proper content where kids, they are, of course, it's going to be entertaining, it's going to be exciting, but it's also going to be educational.
So how do you go from those coffees to the great experiment?
So yeah, he tells me, okay, so you're a credible guy. You know, the parents, they know about you. Let's do something credible together. And I'm like, yes, but like mentally I'm shitting myself because I'm thinking like, I don't have shit. Like how could you, I mean, how is it even going to be possible? And he said, okay, so we want to go and work with this production company. And I said, okay, I know about that production company. They've done tons of chill.
Give them a shout out. Who are we talking about here?
I'm not going to give them a shout out because I didn't choose them.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So, again, I'm trying to be humble here. One of the biggest names. And I was like, yeah, I know about them really well. And but they've done so many things already. I want to try like a curveball. I want to try some loose cannons. I want to see what happens if you take my public service kind of approach and mix it together with some other guys that I, you know, you can say what you want about them, but I think they've done some interesting Swedish television. And they're called Filip and Fredrik.
Yes.
I don't know what you call them, like comedians or actors or whatever, but they do some interesting shows. I know they started a production company called Nexico. I said, you know, can we try it out with these guys instead? I don't know where it's going to lead. I just, you know, I want to try something new because the guys at Viaplay never done children's television before. I never came up with my own ideas before for a show. And these guys at Nexico, they never done children's television either. So
perfect mix of for success. You're guaranteed to succeed.
I mean, it was guaranteed to fail. But that's the approach I wanted. I wanted, you know, to everybody to have that sort of Renaissance feel to it. Like this, you know, like we were all exploring this thing together. I didn't want to come in into a room where everything was already set and fixed, you know. I wanted to really try to do something new. And I sat down with the CEO of Nexico, which is a wonderful man. He's called Lars David Bekkung. Some of you guys maybe remember him as a VJ from the golden era of MTV back in the 90s. And he was a great guy. Also very humble, very, you know, appreciative, very excited, and also very, you know, concerned about a lot of shit that the kids are watching today. And we wanted to do a show that the kids and the parents could watch together and really enjoy instead of just doing another show to distract the children while the parents are frying the meatballs, you know?
Yeah, the TV as babysitter.
Yeah, so we really, really, honestly wanted to do something good for the children to watch. That's going to be exciting, but also going to be educational. So, you know, we started talking to each other and they said, yeah, we're totally excited, we want to do it. But I still hadn't had any ideas. And so one night I was playing with my daughter. By then she was five. Her name is Stella.
Hey, Stella.
Hey, Stella. Det här är på engelska. Det är lite svårt att förstå kanske. But she's, you know, she's picking up some English now. She's seven now. And we were playing around. And I said, you know, I need some ideas to the show. And I sort of got it. And she was like, she was the one that pinpointed at 5 years old. She said to me exactly what we needed for the show. A mad scientist is locking me and two kids up, and every day during the day of December we get a new challenge to solve. If we solve the challenge in time, she might let us out.
Which brings us to the concept of the Yule calendar.
Exactly, because in Sweden there's a long tradition of having a small episode every day leading up to Christmas Eve, starting December 1st. And also a physical calendar that after each show you watch, there's a small little, you can open a little window in this physical, it can be made out of paper, and then it's like chocolate or sweets or whatever hidden underneath it. And we've had this tradition for almost 40 years in Sweden.
The countdown to Christmas. Let me ask, is Stella credited as a producer on this?
Unfortunately not.
Come on, Dad.
I mean, I want to keep her out of the limelight, you know, just a little bit more. I don't want her to flip out. She's got enough stuff going on in her head, you know, but, you know, everyone I talk to is really, you know, I'm really proud to say that it was me and my daughter. We played. The idea for the big experiment came out of me and my daughter playing.
And then it became a production that you did for the Swedish market, but also produced for Denmark, Norway, and Finland. How was that to manage?
Yeah, it was scary because, you know, they said to me from Viaplay that, you know, this is a pan-Scandinavic pan-Scandinavian investment, you know. So we want you to come up with an idea for a show. We want you to do it with a Danish cast and a Norwegian cast as well. We're going to dub it in Finland, but we need two more casts. And I was shitting myself again, but I had the opportunity to hand pick the people I had worked with during the years at SVT and ask them, do you guys want to join me here and help me do like the best show ever? And they all agreed. Everything from producers to set and stage builders, amazing people, mechatronics that could, you know, construct these amazing gadgets and stuff that we used in the show. They were there to help me. And in that process, they also, we all helped out and cost in costing both the Danish and Norwegian cost. So as we said earlier, we already had all the opportunities to fail big time with this show. Now you have to put in the pan-Scandinavian part as well, because we had only got like a full house when it comes to like having all the people we needed to do the show on August 1st, 2016.
Tight.
And from August 1st, we had to figure out the scripts, the stage, the everything, start shooting 72 episodes, 24 episodes per country, edit them, and start sending them by the 1st of December. That doesn't happen. I mean, 3 months for that amount, that's huge. 72 times 15 minutes. Do you realize how much television that is in 3 months?
I think, let me do the math, that's a shitload of television.
That's exactly the right answer.
So clearly there's something different from the approach that you had at Sveriges Television when you were focusing just on the Swedish market. What else is different about working with a streaming partner rather than a traditional broadcaster?
You don't have to think about slot time. I think you call it slot time. Mm-hmm. Like when you work with ordinary broadcast television, you get your 15 minutes. The show is exactly on the second. It needs to be 15 minutes. Doesn't matter if the show holds up for 10 minutes or 20 minutes, you have to make it 15. Now, working in streaming broadcast, that is where it's... did I say streaming broadcast? I mean, streaming, like, that's non-linear...
What is it?
I don't know what to call it.
Like, give it a name.
Like, non-linear television. You do the show as long as you feel that it's good. It can be 12 minutes, and it can be 20 minutes. And that's what's so amazing. If you watch the first series of House of Cards, I mean, there are episodes there that are 45 minutes, and episodes that are an hour 10. Because, you know, that's the amazing thing about working with non-linear television. You could do it as long as it's, you know, as it's good, as it's sexy, as it looks good.
So as you're doing it, do you feel that it's something that's going to succeed? When do you start?
No, not at all.
No.
No. I told you before about the bad self-esteem and all of that. I think everything I do is shit, you know? And even after I won the Kristall and everybody's like, oh, it was so good. And I'm like, dude, have you watched the show? Like, I see so many flaws. I can't watch the show myself because we didn't have the time to really do it the way I wanted to. So now I'm so excited that, you know, we won the Kristallen and we were the first non-linear show to ever be nominated in the category since the beginning of the award show. And we were the first show ever, all categories, that won a Kristallen wasn't broadcast.
So I guess it's safe to say you were surprised when they called your name.
I was shocked, and I was, you know, I would love to be able to feel proud. You know, this is like a major issue for me. Like, I would love to just walk on stage and just be happy and say, yeah. But then, you know, my head screws around with me and says, oh, but you could have done this better and that better. And I even forgot to thank my daughter while doing the acceptance speech.
Stella,
and
if you need an agent, give me a call.
Yeah, it's been like haunting me. So, yeah.
Well, hey, congratulations on the award.
Thank you. I mean, this is a game changer, and it's not about me. It's about a business. Business is not the right word for
a branch.
I mean, this is about television. This is about being accepted for the first time in this, you know, great arena as a show. Like shows that are non-linear can be as good.
Welcome to the Fiend Room, as you say in Swedish.
Yeah, but I mean, this happened. At the Emmy Awards in 2013 for the first time, when Netflix got awards for the House of Cards with Kevin Spacey. And the thing that amazes me even more is, like, I thought that it had to be something like that in Sweden as well. We had to have our own local Kevin Spacey in order to accomplish that.
We're here in the studio with Sweden's Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Yeah. Effie Singer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a major thing that happened, because now all of a sudden Viaplay realizes that, hey man, we should totally fill up this arena with more content, and like all of a sudden maybe we get many parallel productions going at the same time.
They're starting to take some interesting shots out there with their own productions.
Yeah, and I mean, all of a sudden all of those people are really good and maybe feel like it's time for a change, you know, for them as well, being working at the same place for 10 years. Maybe they want to come over here and try to do something here as well. And that's going to be really amazing and awesome.
So does the Kristallen change anything for you? Can you raise your prices?
Yeah, I haven't thought like that. I mean, I was joking around about it. Some reporter asked me about it. And I said, honestly, before the Kristallen, I never got offered a job. Never. All the things that happened to me from, you know, being a teacher, to being a host on Järnkontoret, to writing books for Bonnier Carlsen, to doing experiment boxes for Egmont Kärnan. All of those opportunities came from me waking up in the middle of the night in a panic anxiety attack, thinking, shit, how am I going to pay rent next month? So I start like mass emailing people until I just get like a hit, talk to people, and I sort of try to persuade them to start working with me. But the seconds I came off the stage with a Kristallen in my hand, I'm not kidding. First time ever, like 2 minutes after, somebody came, tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I got this great program idea. You should come talk to me later. And I'm like, I would love to do that, but I'm going to stay with Viaplay for a while now, because they were the ones that were, they were ballsy enough to gamble and try it out with me. They gave me so much confidence. Even if I didn't have like a already like set game plan, they said, okay, we're gonna give it a shot with you. So I feel honored, and I think that it's a pleasure and an opportunity for me to stay with Viaplay for another 2 years.
That seems to be the approach that works best. I mean, the people working at HBO and Netflix who get these contracts, they always refer to the fact that they're left alone to their own devices and come back with their creative output at the end of the day. Nice to hear that about Viaplay as well. You talked about the efforts before you had the Kristallen, you had to chase all the work. Do you have any advice for anyone who's trying to get into this business? Someone young out there who wants to make their mark in media?
You know what? I seriously think that an advantage point that I have had during my many meetings with all these random people, is my self-distance. I don't take myself too seriously. There are a lot of people in this business taking themselves too serious. Don't be afraid to be like, I don't know, to be yourself and to be honest and to be humble. And also don't be afraid to make a fool out of yourself. I mean, a lot of people, they hesitate picking up the phone because they think, oh man, they're all going to laugh at me. But, you know, if you hate yourself enough, then you don't give a shit if they laugh at you or not, because you're already down there. You don't give a fuck. So then you pick up the phone and you start calling people. And I think that's a really good way to start moving things.
I think that's great advice in general. Step away from your ego a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've met many people with very big egos in this business, and I can totally, maybe it's also my accent. You know, I'm from Malmö, so I have this, I speak skånska.
Malmö. The house.
Prata skånska. So, you know, maybe that accent as well gives you the whole, you know, like, taula till bönder på böndersvis. I'm like more like a farmer guy than a career business guy. You know, I never wear suits. I'm just myself. So yeah, just, you know, fuck it. Don't think about what they're going to say or think about you. Just do it.
So, starting to wrap up here, what's next for you? We heard a rumor that you're going to continue with Viaplay. In what kind of capacity? Does that mean another Yule calendar, a different kind of programming?
So, we have been looking at many different opportunities. I still have to pinch myself in the arm by the fact that Viaplay said, hey man, this went well. You want to stay? And I was like, yeah, okay. So we actually signed a deal for another 2.5 years.
All right. Congratulations.
I promised them that I will stay here and be, I will keep my business here when it comes to doing TV shows. And Of course, we have to do more. The Stora Experiment, the great experiment shows. We have to do them because I have so many plans, so many different kind of arenas that I want to explore within the umbrella of the great experiment. I mean, the experience of doing that show was amazing, and everybody at Tekniska Museet here in Stockholm, I would really love to give them a shout out because they really loved the format and they gave us an entire floor to shoot the show and also do an exhibition afterwards that was there for half a year, so kids could actually physically go into the same world where we shot the show. And I want to continue experiencing that, but also looking at other opportunities for other originals with other talents, for the future. I'm going to help Viaplay to build up their Viaplay Kids contact.
So people should tune into Viaplay to see what's next from Beppe Singer.
I mean, timing-wise, Viaplay is the first one on the ball, and it's very probable that it's here you're going to see some of the more exciting productions over the next couple of years.
Well, Beppe, I see that you're looking a little hungry. We're approaching lunchtime here.
I'm looking at our friend, you know, the fly on the wall. Yeah. We have a hummus date in like 10 minutes. We have to be in at the most awesome hummus place in Stockholm. Regev, they got the shit going on right there, right?
Yep.
They got the best chickpea mash ever.
All right, well, I want to thank you for coming up, Beppe. Really appreciate this, you sharing your story with everyone. Best of luck. We can't wait to see what you come up with for Viaplay in the future. And if you want to follow Beppe, he's on Instagram, Beppe Singer at Instagram.
Yeah.
And BeppeSinger.se online. And Beppe's TV coming to Viaplay.
And you know what, Brian? I'm sorry. I really have to thank you as well. Because, you know, this is scary stuff. You're trying out a new pod format here. And I don't know if this is going to be the first show or the last show or the middle show.
Could
whatever.
Be both at once.
But I really, really hope that it goes well because you were one of the most swell and nicest people I've ever worked with. And I really keep my fingers crossed that this podcast is going to be a huge success. So thank you for having me.
Wow. Thank you very much.